Good morning, Barbados, and welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks for Thursday, the 15th of February already. Can you imagine? The year seems to be just flying along. This is Sanka Price. I'm your moderator today, and we finish at 1, but we have some NatSat zonal meetings going on, and they're a lot of fun. So if you have the time and you can get out there and support the kids, you should try to do that. My technical operator today should be young Graham, and we'll see. I'll hear from him later. Of course, you can reach us here at 4341790, and you can also get us on WhatsApp at 266-4862. You can also reach us via email at brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. A lot is happening in the political arena. Of course, the biggest news is that Dr. Maria Agard has moved up, that she's gone over to the UPP. I think this was expected. Everything that has been said in the last several weeks indicated that this would have happened. What I find particularly interesting, though, is her statements related to marijuana in terms of limiting the amount of allowing people to grow a small amount, as well as to have a small amount on their person for personal use. I suspect that will be one of those proposals that will be attractive, certainly to the younger people or persons who use the drug, because for many years people have been complaining, not only in Barbados but throughout the Caribbean region, that people who use a small amount of marijuana, they're unnecessarily being criminalized. So I think that will be an extremely popular proposal, and we'll have to see how that plays out. Of course, the Barbados Secondary Teachers Union, they have issued a mandate to the government, to the Ministry of Education specifically, to meet with them on the issue of escalating levels of violence in the schools. This is certainly a major issue, and we cannot take it very lightly. The BSTU have repeatedly complained that a lot, not only BSTU, I spoke to Pedro Shepherd yesterday, and he also said the same thing, that a lot of incidents take place in the schools that never come to public attention. And that is because a number of the principals try to keep that incident, keep it quiet, to preserve the good name of the school. So they are aware of quite a few incidents that occur that the public don't even know about, and when you find that there are a number of repeat offenders as well. I really can't say no more, but the point is that there are a number of repeat offenders, and so what the image that was painted for me by both Mary Redmond of the BSTU as well as Mr. Shepherd from the BUT is that you have a situation where teachers really feel as if they are under siege, and they really want the Ministry of Education to talk with them, come up with some measures that can deal with the situation. And there's really a need for national dialogue on this whole issue, because you can't have a situation where the ministry is on one side, the teachers on another, and the children on another, the children and parents on another. Everybody wants the same thing. That is to make sure that the children can learn or be educated in an environment that is disciplined and that is free of violence. Everybody wants that. So why can't we start? Why can't all those stakeholders start from that point, where they look at what they have in common and work from there, instead of just shouting at each other and everybody seems to be tearing at each other's throats? It's really not the best thing that's happening in Barbados today in terms of education. Anyhow, enough from me. We have a whole set of calls, but before we get to those calls, we'll take a commercial break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Brass Stats. You're on the air. Good morning. Good morning. This is Brass Stats. All right, young Graham will work that one out. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, good morning, sir. How are you?
I am fine, thank you.
Yeah, I got this morning and someone told me it was their birthday, but then I also remembered something. It's 19 days and we would no longer have any representatives for the constituencies. Is that correct?
I'll do my arithmetic, but 19 days should take us to March 6th, then that would be correct.
Yes, well, yes. And the thing is, then why is this flurry of activity? Because to have all this legislation and all these things being done, every time I open the paper, there's some new piece of legislation or something being done. And, I mean, if you're having an election on the 6th of March...
No. The Parliament...
No election, no. I understand it quite well. Yes. If you're having the Parliament dissolve on the 6th of March, why the hangers-on then? Do we need them? Because if we have these hangers-on, who are going to, before they leave and continue to hang on, there'll be nothing left for any incoming government to do, maybe to repeal some of the things that they might have put forward that didn't make any sense, possibly. I don't know. But I don't really see a need for anyone to hang on.
Well, sir, first of all, you're making an assumption that they are hanging on, that they will not be back. That's the first assumption you are making. And let's be realistic. Eh? Elective politics is really about popularity. And mm-hmm. if the present regime can demonstrate to the public that they have the plan, as the Prime Minister said, which is the new recovery plan, that plan can deliver this country to growth, they can achieve what they never achieved in the last 10 years, well, and the public goes with that, so be it. So they may not be hangers-on, as you were saying. They may actually be just preparing themselves for when they return.
Okay. So the plan, if this plan, the people who brought up the plan are not there to see it through, then the next people can throw it away. Imagine they don't have to carry on with it. In fact, you know, I think it's about time Barbadians have a change and a choice. I mean, seriously, there were some things here. There were 8 little items I want to put on the table here with you. The first one is this question of the term limits for the Prime Minister. Seeing what is happening all over the world, Zimbabwe and all over the world, what even happened in South Africa yesterday afternoon, I think it is very, very necessary that we don't allow our leaders to hang on to power and for their life to the detriment of the country. One. And having said that, I also think something should be done where the parliamentarians should always choose someone to lead them as the prime minister who is au fait with economics or who's able to take on the portfolio of Ministry of Finance. You probably see what the mess we have got ourselves in because you separated those two things. Good. The other matter is this question of recall.
But before you go on, I saw it across you. Okay. Mr. Sinclair, I remember, in fact, there's a clip I suspect that we'll see a bit more of as the campaign heats up, and where Mr. Sinclair is making the point that he is not really trained in that, in economics and whatnot as well. So you have a prime minister who is not trained in that. You also have a minister of finance who's not specifically trained in that area. The question is, do you really need to have your prime minister as well as your minister of finance specifically trained in economics?
Well,
or do you, or could you have, you could use the public servants plus consultants who are so trained and who will give advice? Because at the end of the day, as a political figure, you make policy decisions based on how it not only impacts the country, but also how it is in the best interest of your party and your supporters.
Well, in a small country like ours, now you mentioned that neither person claimed to have any training. Would that not show up sometime? Would that not show up sometime? And all I'm trying to say is that perhaps when political parties are looking at candidates, they should look at this seriously. I am serious about this, because something as important as that, you just cannot put any and everybody and hope that the civil servants would be able to do their jobs for them. Anyhow, having said that, that's
yeah, but the civil servants don't do their job for them. What the civil servants do, or what they should be doing, and what I would think that they're doing, is that they would advise and give options. In other words, option A, if you take this course of actions, this could be the consequences. If you take option B, these are the implications of option B. And if you take option C, these are the other consequences. And then it was left to the political director, the policymaker, the minister, to actually make a decision based on all these things. Because at the end of the day, that minister, along with cabinet, they would have a comprehensive view of what they're trying to achieve for the country. And, you know, this government came to power, and they remember what their mantra was.
Well, I don't remember, but...
Tommy, you don't remember. Come on, man.
Mr. Sanker, you are fitting to the converted when you
Barbados is more than an economy. It's a society. So therefore, that basically is the thrust that they're going with. So their comprehensive view is that you will take certain positions because we are looking at a society as well. It's more than economy.
Well, put it this way, though, that maybe that the root problem with the things that we've seen, the rise of crime and so on, is probably precisely that. You cannot separate the two things, because if your economy is not, to my mind, I may be wrong, and I always bow to that, if the economy is not right, it is really in a bad state, then your society will fall apart. That is my view. I may be wrong.
Well, not but what Mr. Arthur said. Sorry to cross you again, but not what Mr. Arthur said. And I'm quoting, not only the economy is in trouble, the society is in trouble. And if it is in trouble, the duty of a parliament is to rescue it.
Which parliament, though? I even think that at some point, if it has been failing for a long time, that you should, there should be some means of saying, well, look, let us change our minister, let us change our, the people in our parliament, have elections, something. But we just can't continue in the same vein. Anyhow, the other matters I wanted to bring up, I said there were eight little points that I wanted to bring up. The institution of a mandatory date for elections. For example, you can say something like the first Thursday after the 4 years of parliament has expired. In other words, I really believe 5 years is a bit long now. You know, people can suffer and suffer for 5 years. But I feel 4 years, given what we have been experiencing, is maybe more palatable to the community at large. Not the ones who are enjoying all the privileges, of course, but I'm talking about the ones who may feel that they are not enjoying a good life as a result of, you know, what is happening. The other one, something is right there to my heart. This is a mandatory question time. I feel when questions are asked by a member of parliament, whether backbench or opposition or whatever, that it should not be ignored, because they represent the people, and the people want to know what is happening, particularly with their money. You know, we're a small country, and we cannot pretend that we're a big country and get involved in a lot of costly exercises, giving away concessions and don't say a word about them, and then asking the poor in the country to make up the slack. So I think question time is mandatory. In fact, I do note that here in Britain, one member of House of Lords, I think, got in late for question time, and he felt he was honour-bound to offer his resignation. Well, we have to do something, maybe not as drastic as that, but question time should be put in, and it should be respected. The other one, the passage of the, and not only passage, but the proclamation of anti-corruption legislation with teeth. And I would hope that we do not have to judge the next government by dragging their feet after they have achieved the objective of power. And I would hope that within 6 months, at least, that this will be instituted by the next government. Otherwise, I think we should judge them all very, very harshly. We go down.
While you're gathering your thoughts, you would remember that the present government already has passed the law. It just has to be proclaimed. So, it's, again, they can easily do that when or if they return to power.
Well, you know, there is a history of legislation that is full of holes. We don't need that. I mean legislation that has teeth. If it's going to be legislation that seeks to protect the people who make the legislation, then it is no good. It is no good. I don't mean that at all. In fact, it may be a good thing if we consider, from what I hear, if we did consider abandoning the present legislation. Maybe it will. That will be done. I don't know. If you don't have.
Well, it hasn't been proclaimed, so you know.
Right.
When this parliament dies in the next few days, it's dead.
Thank God. Thank God. The next one, mm-hmm. Redefinition of the powers of the Auditor General and the Public Accounts Committee. I did some work. I did submit this here to your program once on the various mechanisms other governments have for making sure that when the Auditor General has made his report, it is respected. And I feel it is time that heads should roll. If, for example, you are supposed to give financial statements every year, and another year passes by, and that has not been given, without question, the head of that organization should be made to resign from his job or be fired. I really believe that. We, in a small country like this, we cannot continue to see our money being wasted. And then, as I say, having poor people having to make up the shortfall. Next thing.
And your last point as well.
Right. Uh-huh. The Public Accounts Committee, I'm going to be liberal. If members of that committee are summoned to a meeting and they, on two occasions, without good cause, they do not attend those meetings, I feel that there should be not allowed to sit in Parliament until such time as they can make amends. In other words, I feel something like that should be done. The people.
So what you're asking for basically is greater discipline, and you want to tighten up everything. Everything is too lax, too much of a laissez-faire attitude towards our governance. That's what you're basically saying, you know.
Yes, sir. And any time we are talking about having an election and you see these people running around begging you for the vote, I'm going to do this, I'm going to legalize this or do that. Trivial thing. But we have to get to the heart of the matter. Make those people that are elected to serve us accountable. If we don't do that, we are going to end up in the same thing we've ended up in the last several years. You might hear somebody come out and say, oh, I have a mandate. In other words, I got elected, so I can do whatever I like.
Right,
that
sir.
Is not democracy.
Your point has been well made. You had a long run, and I hope you have a great day. You take good care. This is Brass Tacks. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning. Good morning. You're on the air. Don't
I
listen.
Have a mandate. In other words,
don't Hello. Listen to your radio, sir.
I'm with you.
Good.
I'm with you.
Uh-huh. Go right ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm well.
Oh, great. It's been a while since I've had the opportunity to call the show, and I intend to be brief because I know how long people are actually on hold. I wanted to say a special good morning to the United Progressive Party, and I'm honored to be a part of that team of bold citizens who are taking this journey to try to create a different reality for our future generation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to say thank you to Ms. Marie Agard as well for joining our team. And I wanted to encourage the citizens of our country to log on to UPB Barbados and look up our policies.
Hold on.
There's an avenue
where we allow for this sort of thing. It's
Understood.
And it's called the advertising department. And
well, so
you
no,
know
what
how
I
you know
leading,
how tough things are.
To.
Hold a second. You know how tough things are these days in this country and this economy. So please, any advertising, send it through our advertising department. Make your point, sir. Let's go on.
So I was leading into you initially with your point about the marijuana policy, which is a very
right.
controversial policy. Uh-huh. And so on the website, we'll detail more because in your presentation, it didn't give a full detail. So
why don't you right now give all listeners
well,
an idea of what this marijuana policy is? Just briefly.
What I want to say is that the members of the party have been working on this for quite a while. We recognize that it is a human rights issue. We recognize that there's some significant loss of young people who are trapped within that field in terms of being caught up in court and all of that legal issues. We recognize that they have a contribution to make to the society. We recognize that there's robust education that is needed in order to get people to understand that it is not, even though it may be legal, a small quantity might be legal, you need to have information with using any substance at all, whether it's pharmaceutical grade drugs or whether it is basically recreational use of a plant that's grown in nature. So it is not just a matter of saying, okay, well, we want to push this as a vote changer. We want to push this because it's a human rights issue, and we want to recognize the many people in our society who are marginalized and don't have opportunities to when they get caught up in the law because of the use of this plant. But we also want to encourage education, mm-hmm. robust education. So we want for the young men to know who may want to continue using this this plant. We want them to make sure that they're covering their bases nutritionally. We want them to make sure that they're studying how to take care of their body, not just sitting on a block all day or sitting somewhere all day and eating junk foods and not taking care of their bodies, because we recognize that if you don't nourish your system, anything that you use will impact on you negatively.
Mm-hmm.
But we also want to make sure that we are clear that we would prefer for nobody to have to smoke anything. The body is not built for smoking. But we understand that these things do take place in society, but we want to create a mechanism where we could engage all of our citizens, particularly our young men, who may be in a state of unsurety, not sure where they fit into society, and they find this thing that they use for recreation. We don't want to marginalize them and push
okay.
them to the side.
Your point
and
make is them your, feel your as point as well.
They're not somebody.
But you, the
to
question,
have contributions to society.
The question that
so,
I,
go ahead, sir.
The question I really want to find out from you. You said it's a human rights issue.
Yeah.
What about
in my mind, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
What about gay and lesbian rights?
Those are all human rights issues.
So what is the UPP's position on gay and lesbian rights?
I am not in a position to speak on that. The UPP has not made any position on that. We've been clear that people's private lives are their private lives, and it's not something that government needs to get involved in on that level, as long as they're dealing with consensual behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
But that needs no further development as far as the UPP is concerned. We have not put any policies on our website or discuss any policies as it relates to that, but we have not isolated that as an issue that needs to be addressed.
Okay, sir. Well, you have preached the gospel. Have a great day. And I hope people turn on to the website. And next time, take an ad. This is Brass Stacks. Good morning. Good morning. Stop listening to your radio, please. Go right ahead.
Good morning to you, Mr. Sankarpais. How are you?
I am well. And you?
Well, not too bad. I haven't spoken for a little while. Look, there have been a strong pushback from the Minister of Education and the Chief Education Officer, Ms. Karen Bess, against the metal detectors in the schools. But yet still, I am hearing that teachers, according to the Education Act, got the authority to search the students and their bags and so on. That's a bit risky to me because bags are not going to be allowed to be searched. Just willy-nilly, people are going to hold on to what are theirs. Those are their bags. And this authority, I have been hearing that you have the authority to search my property, my bags, as a school child. This is going to be met with some strong resistance. Well, what do you think about that?
But, sir, that policy has been in place for quite a while. This is nothing new. So let's be realistic. When you're talking about minors, mostly, generally minors, are people under 18. They go to a public institution where they're not supposed to have any weapons and whatnot, and where there's a growing level of unruliness and violence. Therefore, measures have to be taken to ensure that they do not carry any weapons or anything like that in their bags. And yes, I think that the schools are well within their rights to institute such measures. They're doing random searches, and they randomly search, I would suspect, a lot of the known troublemakers, and plus those who are associated with those troublemakers, because they want to protect the general body.
How about those who are not troublemakers too?
Well, you see, the whole argument there that they will get caught up in this whole thing. If they have nothing in their bags, they're not a problem. But you see, this is the whole... It is interesting that you raise this, because you can put me off on a tangent here. And that tangent here is dealing with the bill that was just passed, the Police Act, okay, amendment bill, when you have accordions and curfews. Because I remember somebody wrote in on the WhatsApp, that they're law-abiding citizens, so they don't have anything to fear. But the point is that as long as you are within the area, like a child who's a quote-unquote good boy or good girl or going to school, they're liable to get the bag searched. Likewise, under the Police Amendment Act, their homes will be able to be searched, and they will be able to question about something because they're caught up in the same area. I mean, that's just how it works. That's how laws and rules and regulations work. Go ahead.
You see, why I mentioned the metal detectors and this...
I want to talk to you about that in particular.
But did this push back? I was linked...
But I agree with Ronald Jones, you know. And I'll tell you why I agree with Ronald Jones, all right? First, before I even say that, I was looking at a file going back to 1992, when Ronald Jones was the president of the Barbados Union of Teachers. And Mr. Jones's position today is consistent with what he was saying back then. Okay, the file is in my desk. Okay, so what Mr. Jones is saying is nothing new. He has maintained that throughout the 20-odd years that have passed. But also, and I'll tell you why I agree with him.
Uh-huh.
And if you know most school plants in Barbados, even if you have metal detectors at the gates, okay, fellas are going to find a way to throw things over a wall or under a fence to get them in. To my mind, So you're going to have basically, you've invested thousands of dollars in metal detectors, and they will really come up with very little. The best way, in my view, is having that manpower there, one or two security people at certain checkpoints where they actually check bags or do random searches in classrooms of bags. So nobody knows when a search is going to happen. It will just happen. It's like at any institution where security matters, they make these random searches, right? That is usually the best way of getting people off guard and locating weapons.
That discussion you had with Mr. Pedro Shepherd, that the incidents at the elite schools.
Not elite schools. He was talking. No. You don't put words in my mouth.
We were talking about
schools in general.
But those are my words. At those schools, you cannot allow the public to know what is going on, because it would smear the good image of those schools.
Mr. Wismar Graves. His name is Wismar. Not Wismar Graves. Mr. Wismar Graves. Hold on, no. Mr. Wismar Critchlow, I think it's Wismar Critchlow. Or Winston Critchlow, Winston Critchlow. He's dead now. He passed some time ago. He was the president of Harrison College. I remember that he was making the point that there were gangs at Harrison College.
Okay? I know that. Yeah. That's new to me.
But it may be new to you, but the interview was there. It was in the Nation newspaper. Okay? He was speaking then as the president of BAPS, which is the Principals Association. So the whole thing of this elitist schools and whatnot, no, stop that. People always come with that, as some red herring. Don't do that.
You don't think that the reason...
Each principal is proud of their school and they want to protect their name. And there ain't nothing wrong with that.
I was trying to link something. You don't think the pushback then from the metal detectors would help to protect the incidents that may happen at these other schools, which I call elitist, from getting it? Because you may meet a very high-profile person's child or children caught up in the metal detector, showing up that they too are involved in this behavior. And maybe the reason why you don't want the metal detectors there, it will show up, but you don't want to show up.
Do me a favor.
Okay.
Give me a name of two of what you call the elite schools. Just give me two names.
The colleges, Queen's College,
okay,
Harrison
good.
College. Good,
stop there. Queen's College, Harrison College. Now, if I wanted as a student to get weapons into Harrison College, do you know that I do not have to walk them through the two main entrances? Do you know that there's a gate, the gates all around, and people can throw things over? They can put them under the fence and everything like that? Come on. Metal detectors are not the answer. Mr. Jones is completely correct in that. I would support him 100%. And as I said, Ronald Jones has held this position since 1992, and I agree with him. It will not work. Queen's College is also another big plant. Do you know how much places around on Queen's College that you can sneak weapons on board that compound and then retrieve them later? So the student, the bad boys or the bad girls, they're going to walk through and nothing is going to happen. They're not going to have any weapons. But later on, they will get out there at lunchtime or whatever, retrieve the weapons, do what they got to do. So metal detectors is just an expensive waste of time. Mr. Jones is correct, as far as I'm concerned.
Let me conclude here. I believe it's very risky then, according to the law, to put teachers to be responsible for the searching of children's bags, because they're not going to want it. And you're putting the teachers at risk. We know that there was a car that came into collision with a big rock at the Pine. These things will happen, Mr. Price. So do not put the teachers at that risk, bringing, as according to Mr. Shepherd's, wardens, police, or increase the security. Security ain't got no authority either. They're just security guards. This is what I'm talking about. It is going to be risky, and we learned recently that there was a shooting overseas and 17 people were dying by a school boy who was disciplined. This discipline thing is going to cause a lot of trouble at schools. The persons do not want to be disciplined, and they're going to hurt somebody. That's all I have to say for today.
Well, thank you. What, two things. One, you know, there's a, I've heard from WhatsApp, and this person is actually correct. There's a portable one-type metal detector that might be useful in random searches. And that could be used because that they can have them and they can just be going around using them as against the big metal detector at the door. That makes more sense in your random searches. Okay, that's one. And yeah. Two, you just now talk about the discipline.
Yeah.
Now that what is needed is a comprehensive program where when you have children who are consistently giving. Who have behavioral problems and become violent, there must be some place other than Dawes, which is a penal institution, to where they can be sent and where they can be monitored, where they can be coached in some form or fashion to see how you can address their issues.
Yeah.
All right? We don't, do we have, the question is, do we have enough of that here? Do we have some place like that? There's the Egnon Nichols Center. Is that operating at its maximum? Is that properly funded? Is it properly resourced? Mm-hmm. You see, these are the comprehensive issues that we have to grapple with. So, Mr. Jones, I think correct in terms of the metal detectors at the gates. I think that's a waste of time. Okay, the random searches would work, and then also making sure that you have some place where you can deal specifically with young men and women who show violent and deviant behavior.
Yeah, but
and of course, there are also other interventions that are necessary. And that's why I keep saying that there's a need for this comprehensive dialogue between the teachers' unions, which is who represents the teachers, and the ministry, as well as the Parent Teachers Association, so that everybody can come up with a reasonable plan, see much we'll cost it, and then we'll try to put it in place, because all of us at the end of the day want the same thing, which is the best environment for our children to learn, to achieve, and to do great things for Barbados.
Yeah.
Okay? Have a great day, man.
You too.
Okay. We take a commercial break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. It is 10:45. Don't forget, we are going to 1 today. And of course, we take a break at 11:55 for the regional roundup. That's an hour and 10 minutes time. And we also take a break at 12:30 for the latest. And I suspect one of the stories that we may hear in the latest is something that I'm seeing here now on the web, that Mike Tyson, the former world heavyweight boxing champion, has died from a massive heart attack. So I'll try to get some more information to you and bring that to you. Anyhow, we go back to the phone lines. You're on the air. Good morning. Good morning. Yes, good morning. You're on the air. Please stop listening to your radio and just listen to your telephone. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning to you.
How are you today, sir?
Not too bad at all.
Okay.
No, this morning, I want to speak a little on the transportation and the distribution of children going to school in the St. Michael area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I have noticed that there has been no network set up for many, many, many years to accommodate the amount of children coming from the country areas to St. Michael schools. And I was suggesting that many years ago, that zoning were, or is, or should be, the appropriate steps to move to allow the traffic to be more free in the St. Michael areas, especially on mornings. I find that when these children are on holiday, you can get a little ease because there's not that flow of traffic. And I also find that no person is paying persons that make these type of calls any mind to continue to allow children to come from St. Philip, St. George, St. Lucie to St. Michael's schools, where even the primary schools. And I find that that is what's causing this whole backup of traffic on mornings. I don't know if you ever noticed it, sir.
Yeah, there are major traffic. Is my mic on? Right. There are major traffic problems every morning. There's this whole situation with zoning that should have been instituted. Sir, I'm getting a tremendous feedback here because I'm hearing myself and I'm getting a lot of noise here. What are you doing? Are you outside or something?
No, I'm in my kitchen. Nothing even on.
Oh, okay.
Stove,
right. The whole situation of zoning is one of those issues that...
That's what it means.
Right. I'll just continue talking. The situation of zoning is one of those issues that should have been dealt with a long time ago. Well, not dealt with, but seriously instituted some time ago. It is folly. Yeah, I'm still talking. It is folly that you have children who live, say, somewhere in St. Michael, but they're going all the way down. They're going either to Princess Margaret or they're going to Aline or something like that. So you have too much of that. But the worst thing of all is when people have to catch more than one bus, or you have to transfer from one area, like if you live in Christchurch, for example, and so you go to the Fairchild Street bus terminal, and then from the Fairchild Street bus terminal, you then have to walk down to the river terminal to catch a bus to go to a school somewhere in St. James. Some people argue about it, but that's where the bypass comes in. Yeah, but at the same time, the whole idea of zoning was supposed to deal effectively with that. So, it is a problem, and it needs to be dealt with. And this is where this decisive action needs to be taken. And we keep talking about these things all the time, but at the end of the day, people still want to go to certain schools because they feel by going to certain schools, their children will be able to do much better.
Now, one other thing that I had suggested to myself, really, is that I don't see the reason why in 11 plus, if a child does not have the acquired marks to go to the school near to him in St. Michael or St. George, wherever it is. In the olden days, we used to provide an extra class, we call it class or form, for those type of children. They would be in the same area, the same settings, but they would have a special class in the same facility, same classroom, in the same building for them. Instead of sending the children that is not academically inclined to, say, St. Lucie, Grant Adams, all those other schools, those other lower grade schools, why there can be a provision at even the primary school or somewhere for them, instead of having them traveling on buses, and going to other schools that they don't even know some of the friends and so on. And I feel this is what caused a lot of problems and trouble with the fighting and so on. Now, you think about that?
Sir, they can go out fighting buses. Buses, no matter what. Come on.
No, I don't mean on the. I mean, instead of having the children traveling these distances, because I don't know if you realize that when they travel on buses, especially the mini buses, the music alone disturbs the brain in time they get to school. I don't know if you're aware. If they're using transport by bus, they may not get that, but.
I keep hearing that argument, and